Chapter 2, Policies, Practices, and Programs. In this chapter, you learned about the interrelationship between litigation and legislation. Many times, litigation led to the enactment of various laws. Specifically, there are several court cases that you've studied that helped with the passage of Public Law 94-142. It's important to remember that the legislation did not develop in a vacuum. It is the result of efforts on behalf of attorneys, parents, and professional associations who attempted to achieve rights for children with special needs. Many of the protections and privileges that children with disabilities have today can be directly linked back to the litigation that started in the late 60s, early 1970s. Over the past decade, there has been a movement in special education, as well as general education, towards greater and higher accountability. You are now teaching in the age of standards-based education. One of the key examples of this was the enactment of the No Child Left Behind Act in 2001, which highlights accountability efforts and even requires teachers, be they general education teachers or special education teachers, to be highly qualified. Additionally, there was another major arena in special education legislation was the passage of Public Law 93-112 in 1973. This is the Rehab Act of 1973, specifically Section 504. Section 504 of this legislation is much broader in its coverage and its intent than the more restrictive Public Law 94-142. Public Law 93-112 provides protections across an individual's lifetime, unlike the education legislation that stops once the child reaches the age of 21. Public Law 93-112, the Civil Rights Act of 1973, is an example of civil rights legislation. It is not education law. In this chapter, you are also introduced to the terms of intra and inter-individual differences, differences that separate individuals from others. For example, we all differ in height, weight, and shoe size. That is known as inter-individual differences. But when you look at the person and their unique patterns of strengths and weaknesses, then we're focusing on their intra-individual differences. Chapter 2 also walked us through the referral process as to how children are able to get into special education and receive their customized services. It is sometimes a long and drawn-out process involving multi-factor assessment, many professionals working in concert with parents, and an educational decision is then made as to whether or not the child is going to receive a special education under the federal legislation. Once a child is declared eligible for a special education, he or she will have an individualized educational program, commonly referred to as an IEP. This document drives the delivery of services for individuals 3 through 21 years of age. For the infants and toddlers, those young people from birth through age 2, their document is known as an Individualized Family Service Plan. One of the key issues today is where services are to be provided. The term used in the federal legislation is least restrictive environment, which really isn't a place, but it's a concept that says children with disabilities should be educated to the maximum extent appropriate with their typical peers. As you can well imagine, sometimes that can be contentious because the parents may want one thing and the school might think something else. But typically, if the parents and the professionals can work together, they can come up with the most appropriate learning environment or educational setting for that particular student.